Welcome back to the Mob Mentality Show, and I'm Austin Chadwick. This is Chris Lucian, and today we have Woody Zuhl joining us. So this is a huge pleasure, and so we were talking about it before the show. We're basically just gonna start with one topic and see where it goes. We could end up in many different directions, and so what is the saying, Woody? You discover the work while you're doing the work.
Yeah, that's pretty close.
Yeah.
It's in the doing of the work.
Okay.
That we discover the work that we must do.
All right.
That's probably my favorite idea that I've followed for years and years now. So let's see what we discover today.
Yeah, so we're going to, at a very meta level, we're going to do that for this whole episode. So to kick us off, what was the first topic?
Yeah, I'll move it over. So I wanted Woody brings a unique view that he's seen a lot of different organizations adopt mob programming, and also being at our organization as well, and when we were discovering mob programming. And so what I think we can just kick off the topic is, through all of your different experiences in mob programming adoption at different organizations and different situations, what are the patterns that you've recognized, or are there any, and How has that saying played into all of those experiences?
Oh, that's excellent. That's excellent. So one of the first things is that wherever I go, I think it's important that we understand if we're going to work together, we need to voluntarily do that. Mm-hmm. So that the pattern that I've seen over and over again is when I come into a company to start sharing with them what mob programming is, and basically all I ever do is share the experiences we had. I'm really never trying to say, here's something you should do, or here's how you should do it. I'm just saying, here's what we did, and here's why we did it. Mm-hmm. And that's how we got from where we started to where we were doing this full time. So that's all I can share. But one of the things that was important to us was the idea that all the activities that we were doing leading up, I wouldn't say all, but almost all the activities we were doing leading up to where we started mob programming, had to do with it being voluntary.
Yeah.
We're going to do studying together, but it's voluntary. You can come, you don't need to come. You can participate, but you don't need to participate. You can watch. The same thing went with pair programming or TDD. We had a few requirements. One was any work that we're going to do has to be visible to the whole team. Mm-hmm. We're not going to work on stuff that's hidden from the rest of us. There were a few minor things that I would say were close to being rules. So I see this everywhere I go. I will always get out of, let's say, 20 people in a workshop, there'll be two or three who are really going to fight this. Mm-hmm. They're going to say, boy, if we let this happen, they're going to force us to work this way.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing I would say is we got to understand this is voluntary. Nobody should be forced to work as a group. On the other hand, I ask everybody to be open-minded.
Mm-hmm.
And so the pattern that I often notice is those who most resist it, often near the end, are those who get the best benefit out of realizing that maybe this could work.
Mm-hmm.
I have one terrible example to give. I had a manager come to me at the very beginning, before we started the workshop. He said, there's these two people on this team, and they're already fighting this. They're going to everybody and telling them how bad this is going to be. What are we going to do? And I said, well, you know, that's... they got to have their own opinions.
Yeah.
That's what this is all about. And by the end of the day, one of them particularly came to me, but both of them did. And they both said, well, I'd like to give this a try.
Yeah.
And I think just being exposed to it can reduce the fears.
Yeah.
So the pattern that I see is there's usually some volunteers. There's often some people also who don't want to even try it or consider it.
Mm-hmm.
They already have arguments as to why this isn't going to work.
Yeah. And I actually love the, what I got out of a lot of Linda Reising's talks was, the diffusion of innovation theory and everything along those lines. And those resistant people are resistant for a reason. And it's okay to be accepting of that. I think that's really definitely an important thing.
So I'm going to take that a huge step further is I could be completely wrong about everything I believe. So if we're going to talk about Linda Reising, we've got to understand she's a big proponent of understanding our biases, the fallacies that we have.
Yeah.
I like having my biases confirmed, so I'm just as guilty as the next person of all of these things. And
Absolutely.
That's why we really need to be careful to not shove it down somebody's throat and say, this is how you're going to work.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
really good. So in those examples, I guess, you've had different durations of time that you've been with different teams,
right,
and in their growth phases. Is there any, are there any maybe pieces of advice that you'd give to people that are either in the middle of it from the ground level, or even from a management side of things? What things do you have to say to those people that are watching this that want to gain some understanding of you know, what's normal, I guess, in all of this process? Maybe there's a lot of anxiety around certain things that occur in these processes.
Well, I want to key off that thing you just said about what's normal.
Yeah.
It's because I'm pretty sure you'll know that I'll say there's nothing normal, right? It's going to be different everywhere you go.
Yeah.
The places that I've revisited the most frequently, when I go back to revisit, I notice that it's very natural for me to just sit with them and start programming.
Yeah.
So even though I often don't know the languages, their keyboards are often set up for some human, you know, keyboard language that I don't use. Mm-hmm. So it's all of those stumbling blocks in front of me. But as soon as I sit down with the team, the work manner of people working together to accomplish something wonderful feels comfortable everywhere I go.
Yeah.
In fact, if I was to take this and expand it out to the biggest level I could, we really need to do this in the world, in everything that we do right now, not just programming.
Mm.
We got to be figuring out how to work with other people as best as we can.
Mm-hmm.
And let's figure that out sooner rather than later. We need it now. We need it now.
And I think that one of the big things when I first started working with you that you kind of laid down as maybe a ground rule early on was kindness, consideration, and respect. And so maybe you can talk a little bit to that, because I think that we've continued to make that some of our key, you know, stepping stones, I guess, to
yes,
making things go further.
I would like to take credit for that, but I don't think I can. My recollection, you correct me if I'm wrong, because you were there, is we got together in a meeting, you know, separate from doing our work. This is like to work on the meta level, not to work on our work or not to work on our model of work, but to work on our purpose in this stuff. And we got together in this meeting because we were having some hard times with a few people on the team not getting along well.
Yeah.
And we sat in that meeting, and I think one of the techniques I like to use is pose a question that we can answer with one or two words, and then collect those up, do an affinity grouping or a theme grouping as to them, and decide which one's most important to us with dot voting and the number of stickies or whatever. And we settled on, as a group, those three words: kindness, consideration, and respect.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Do you not remember that?
No, I don't. I don't. Yeah,
so
yeah, yeah.
That's a clear memory for me, so I could be completely wrong.
No, I'm sure you're right. Because that's the funny thing is that, you know, every time that I think you and I talk about those early days, there's stuff that you often I hear from you, like, you're like, I don't remember that.
So we're going to see it from a different point of view.
This
is a tricky thing, because not everybody in the room hears everything that was said, and they're all there hearing it from their own point of view.
Yeah.
So you can never have an agreement. In fact, are you familiar with Wheels' Laws?
Mm.
You ever heard of Wheels' Laws?
Mm, yeah.
The basic idea of Wheels' Laws, the main one is communication never really happens.
Yeah.
And so it's like when it's really important for communication to happen, it will fail.
Mm.
When we believe that communication happens, we're mistaken.
Mm.
He has like four or five of these laws. They're worth looking up.
Yeah.
And you can find them in Wikipedia, so you know they're true. And so but anyways, this was my recollection, and I may have taken pictures of those post-it notes.
Uh-huh.
Once we settled on those three ideas, my recollection is that we asked ourselves, well, how are we going to do this? Because clearly, we would already be behaving in a kind, considerate, respectful way to each other.
Yeah.
If we knew how to do it, we don't know how to do it. And somebody suggested on the team, let's just pretend for a day to be good people. Let's pretend that we're kind. Let's pretend we're considerate. Let's pretend that we're respectful. And we did it for a day, and at that time we were doing a daily quick retrospective at the end of the day. Yeah. And my recollection is everybody said that was much better.
Yeah.
That was much better. And our habit was to say, well, how do we turn that up for tomorrow? And sometimes that just means let's do that same thing again tomorrow. Yeah. And that's my memory of it. I hope somebody else on the team remembers it. Otherwise, I fabricated it. And I should carry a recorder and record everything I say.
Yeah, yeah. So what I'm learning is if you only have one founder mob program, and they can make up whatever story they want, how something came to be. But if you have two, then you might get closer to the truth.
So. No, I think we will see different views. So everything we have in our work, but in our lives as well, everything is multifaceted.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And so... you know, the guy, Dave Gray, I think is his name, who wrote the Liminal Thinking book. Mm-hmm. Please forgive me if I got your name wrong. he has one of the diagrams in his book that basically shows, you know, here's all the knowledge possible to have about everything in the universe. Then it goes down to this one little thread that comes up for any one of us. Those are the things we've been exposed to.
Yeah.
Within that one little thread is the things we've paid enough attention to actually get some of it into us. That's a teeny tiny drop.
Yeah.
It's just a teeny tiny drop. I had a very specific goal when I came to Hunter. So I had already had a good job. My dad had taught me this years ago, is the best time to look for a new job is when you already have a job, especially one that you like, because then you can be kind of choosy. So I interviewed at 5 or 6 or 7 places. And I laid out the same rules everywhere I went. And usually you can go up through the interview process. And at some point they're going to say, no, we're not interested in this. Yeah, yeah. And that's what was happening at most places. But where we started my programming, I only had a few goals. One was that when I'm done being here, they won't need a manager anymore. Mm-hmm. Another one was when I'm done here, that the team will be able to do all the things needed to be responding to change basically in an agile manner. Mm-hmm. Because that's what they were asking for. We want to become agile. So another thing was, I want to make it where people want to come to work here. Mm-hmm. Because prior to that, if you went to a user group and said, hey, I work at this place, they would say, oh, that's so sad to hear. And so I wanted to make where people want to come to work here, and I think we accomplished that.
Absolutely.
Or maybe I didn't myself, but I think we started to accomplish that as a team, and I think we proved that after I left.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I felt I needed to leave. I'm going to make that really clear, because it's kind of like once you've accomplished what you can accomplish, you're just holding them back if you stay.
Okay.
Because it's their time to do the growing that they can do only without you.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was happening. That was one of the main things. I love to tell that story.
Yeah.
the way I thought I could be there at about maybe 2 years would be enough time for me to hand off all the stuff that at least I thought was reasonable to do or principles to follow. And after about 2 years, I think I could have easily left. But I was enjoying it too much.
Yeah.
I really loved being there. It was the best place. And my wife used to say, when you used to come home before you went to work here, you were often grumpy.
Yeah.
And now you're always happy.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, so all I got to do is accomplish sneezy. Yeah. And dopey, and pretty soon I'll be a dwarf. You better cut that.
No, that's good. I like it.
So
we're
anyways,
leaving it in.
But let's put the point on this, is that that once we started accomplishing these things, it's what proved to me that the 10 years leading up to it, I had done a good job of learning the approach to take that would help us discover good things.
Mm.
So mob programming itself is an okay thing. It's a great thing to know about. If it's a technique that we want to use, I wouldn't even call it technique, it's a way of thinking, let's try to work well together.
Mm.
That's great. But having an environment where that sort of thing can rise up, that's what's important.
Yeah.
Mob programming itself is just a thing. That's the wrong term. It is just a way to think about how we might work together.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't eliminate the idea of solo programming or pair programming or other ways we might be able to work.
Mm-hmm.
but dang, there's a lot more important stuff than these work arrangements.
The fact that mob programming was able to emerge at this organization was,
yes,
I think, one key factor, right?
Yeah, so over, I'd say, since 1999 or so, almost, it's 20 years now, but it was only, 11 or 12 years when I got on at Hunter, I was experimenting with this stuff, reading everything I could, trying everything I could, sometimes with extreme failure, sometimes with moderate success, but tiny successes started showing me that the tiny successes accumulate.
Yes.
And that's not a bad thing. So that's where I don't know who I originally got it from. Sometimes I think it could be Kent Beck, the idea of turn up to good.
Mm-hmm.
But it's combined with others that it kind of gelled. The idea that if we turn up the good every day, we get this compounding effect that we can't get,
yeah,
if we're trying to make things better, like at a once-a-year retreat, or maybe at a monthly retrospective.
You won't get it out of a once-a-year retweet either.
Yeah, retweet. Well, that's a good point. It depends on who retweets. I will point out, I like to mention people's names. So Ron Jeffries,
mm-hmm,
has a lot of this thinking in his writing, mm-hmm, as well. And even though we don't necessarily agree on everything,
sure,
I think that it's worth reading his book on the art. I think it's called The Art of Software Development.
Mm-hmm.
You can look it up and put it in your,
yeah,
notes.
Yeah.
So I don't know who originated the ideas that I used, but that's a really important one.
Nice. Awesome.
But we're just roaming around now.
I have a follow-up question to that, yeah, if you don't mind. Yeah, so you mentioned turning up good a couple times here. So if you had a magic wand and could turn up the good, one thing you could turn up the good on for everyone mobbing or just everyone in general, what would you turn up the good on?
Oh, that's like too easy.
Is it too easy? All right.
Well, because that goes to the quote from Robert Henri.
Yeah.
Which is, the object isn't to create art, it's to be in that wonderful state which makes art inevitable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's the space to work on. This is about the system. So if we really think about it, there's some kind of a system of work that we follow. We either do it by default, it's whatever naturally grows around the work we're doing. If we're making a sandwich, it can be easy as, you get two slices of bread, you put some mayonnaise on it, if you like mayonnaise, you put, some mustard, you put some lettuce, you put some meat, you put some cheese. That's the system of work. And it's not really well defined. Everybody can make their sandwich their own way. But if we own a sandwich shop, we're going to define the system of work. This is how you make a sandwich. That's okay stuff. But now we have to understand, well, why are we making sandwiches?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we should be just ordering sandwiches already made. It's like there's layers of systems around these things. At some point, it gets out to, well, what's the purpose? What's our purpose in these, mm-hmm, things that we're doing? What it comes down to is if we want wonderful things to happen, we need to make an environment where these things can emerge.
What are properties of that environment for in the context of software?
Well, so it's a puzzling thing to me right now. I do believe that people being self-organizing is an important part of this.
Mm-hmm.
And I would to say blatantly, we bring people into a company and then think what we need to do is manage them.
Mm-hmm.
And what we actually need to do is figure out how to let people not need to be managed.
Mm-hmm.
What would that be like?
Mm-hmm.
And there's lots of companies doing these things, lots of people experimenting with it. I won't mention any company names, but coming in, listening to a company, I won't mention the company's name at all, but as I was coming in on the, listening to the radio, they were interviewing a person who's written a book about having taken some kind of menial jobs and then what it was like having those jobs. And one of them was this big retail firm that sells stuff over the internet. I won't mention any names, but they have large fulfillment centers.
Yeah. Well, what's the name of the company?
Yeah.
And so they were basically saying, this was a very demoralizing, demeaning kind of work they were doing. They were a picker, picking items to put onto a cart that would then get put into boxes to send to people. They're not allowed to listen to music. They're not really, they have no time to talk to each other. And they have a device that indicates that they're not going fast enough.
Yeah.
is telling them how many seconds they have to get the work done. So I won't mention any company names, like I said already. But if you don't know already who that is, yeah, you probably aren't listening to this podcast. So what is it we're trying to do? Is our work merely helping consolidate the ownership of goods and power in a few people across the world? Is that the purpose of our work? Well, what should be the purpose of our work? And boy, we got to figure this out.
Yeah.
We can't keep doing things the way we are. I think that our world is telling us that right now.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to be figuring this out. Boy, that took us way down a dark tunnel now. So let's lighten things up. I have a lot of hope. I think things can get better.
So don't attach trackers to all the programmers.
So there's actually people. I've known of people
who've doing that.
Keystrokes and things like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yes.
So, wow. Yeah, so this is creating an environment where great things can happen. Part of it is understanding what's important and what isn't important.
Yeah, absolutely.
And maybe that's the starting point.
Yeah. So that's like a great, I think, high level. What's like a practical step to move in that direction, I guess?
Dang, if I could tell you that, I think I'd have the answer to the world. First of all, any problem that we think we have is probably not the problem.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
When we think we've identified a problem, we've probably just seen enough to understand there's a symptom.
Mm-hmm.
And that symptom may or may not be rooted in a problem we need to be paying attention to. That's part of what the Turn Up the Good idea is about. So when I first learned Turn Up the Good, which probably was long, long ago, maybe the seeds of that came when I was a child in my first jobs, Turn Up the Good to me kind of meant whatever we're doing can be improved slightly. Mm-hmm. And if we just keep doing that, then things get better and better. And part of it has to be, well, how can we better self-organize? And it can be very, very easy, like with software development, as we did on our first, where we first, envisioned this idea of mob programming, was let's make the work visible. Well, that's been around for a long time. However, many places don't do that. They maybe make the next few weeks visible, but we need to make all the work visible. So there's a step in making the roots of that for me go back to a place I worked back in the 70s, where they were following what we would now call a lean approach to manufacturing, and that nothing got made in that shop unless an order had been placed for it. So this is considered just-in-time delivery. It was a company that was making, I would consider, high-end, very high-quality, very good-quality musical instruments. And boy, just watching it work, how that works, we're not doing stuff unless there's a real purpose for it when we work in that manner. At a place like in software development, much of what we do is work that will never get to the customer. You can consider this inventory.
Yeah.
And inventory in a company doing software development is not obvious compared to inventory on a manufacturing floor.
Mm-hmm.
I went to a company once. They invited me to come and look at their processes and talk to them about how they could improve things. And the first thing I noticed was there were boxes and boxes of stuff everywhere you looked. Piles and piles of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what is all this stuff here for? Well, that's going to get assembled up with this other stuff over there. And all I could think of, boy, this is like lean, manufacturing 101.
Yeah.
If you see boxes and boxes of stuff, let's figure this out. Why do we have inventory that's sitting around that nobody's using? But that's obvious.
Yeah.
How do you measure in your company? I would forward this to everybody in your podcast. How do you measure what the inventory in your company, your inventory of software that's been worked on that isn't yet delivering value to the end user?
Mm-hmm.
Mm. How do we even determine that? I've only been to maybe one or two places that I could legitimately say it looks like they're at least attempting to do that.
Yeah.
Most places, they kind of look at me like, well, what is that?
Yeah.
They're not even thinking about that. I've
yeah.
been in places I've worked where something wasn't delivered for 6 months to a year, been worked on for a year or so, 6 months to a year. And I've been at some places where we worked on something for 2 or 3 years,
mm-hmm.
and it never went to the end user.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff that never got merged in, even worse is stuff that got delivered to the end user, but nobody ever used it.
Yeah.
So that's a kind of inventory as well, because it has to be delivering value to stop being just inventory. Yes. Every line of code we add to our code base is another line that complicates our project or our application and makes it harder to maintain.
Yeah.
I've seen people actually read through code that they thought they might affect if they fix a bug. So I'm going to read through a bunch of code to see if I make that change, will that break any of this? And that code was not reachable.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they would read it. People would read through it every time. I finally thought, well, what if I just delete that code? Let's see what happens. You know, the code that you change today cannot affect code that has been deleted.
Right? Yeah,
it just can't happen.
I like that.
And so somebody's that I'm sure didn't come from me, but we got to have our code bases. It got to be simple and clean. This goes for everything.
Yeah.
This is part of, I'm going to be talking about it at an upcoming conference, my idea of make it easy. So when we got to where we were doing mob programming, I brought with myself these concepts from before. Make it easy. How can you make things easier? And I read in a book, it's really, the guy said it really well. Every day you should work on something that you need to do tomorrow so that you either don't need to do it or it's easier to do it. Mm-hmm. So you do something that makes it where it's unnecessary to do that thing or easier to do that thing. If you do that every day, pretty soon you'll weed out all the stuff of that sort. There's a really tremendous concept about this, based in this. This is what the Make It Easy is kind of about. So I like the way that guy wrote about it. Is it okay to mention a book?
Yes.
I think this book is called The One Thing, and there's a couple books with that title. But it's a pretty good book, and we can get a link for that if you want.
Nice.
I would recommend very highly at least reading a synopsis of the book, because I'm sure that's the main content of it.
Nice. So to try to summarize a little bit.
I don't think we can do that.
Okay. Never mind.
Let's try it.
There's one topic that I wanted to cover before we end. The Big Agile in DC is coming up, and so
and
you're doing some workshops and things along those lines there.
Yeah.
So it might be worth just kind of moving on to that topic before we wrap it up for today, and just talk a little bit about Big Agile. I know that I'm doing some stuff there, and
but what are you doing there?
I'd have to go and look up the titles, but it's essentially some stuff on Lean Startup, and also just innovation pipelines in general, because I think that's just something that I've been buried in and lately, and then also kind of automation as a further automation as a philosophy, and talking a little bit about the aspect of reviewing what currently is existing that's not automated that could be.
Well, that's kind of dovetails nicely in with the idea of make it easy.
Yeah.
So just automating things, that's where my whole career in software development kind of started. Was I realized I needed to write software because you couldn't get quality software that I needed. And how am I going to learn to do this? And I just started automating things.
Yeah.
And that's a great place to start. So, this is about making it easy. If you can make it easy to do your work today, then tomorrow you'll have more time to make it easier more. This sort of goes into the paper by Sturman Repenning.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody ever gets credit for solving problems that never happen.
Yep.
That's a great paper. And we were attempting to do this at that place where we first started mob programming.
Yes.
And my idea was we're going to spend time studying together.
Yeah.
And that studying together will make it easier for us to build our capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
But I like what you're covering there. That's going
to
be fun.
Yeah. Nice. So I wanted to, dive into the topics that you might.
So one of them is going to be make it easy.
Yeah.
Make it easy itself. It's going to be a short session, maybe a 70-minute session, but we're going to do some workshop kind of stuff. And what I really want to be talking about is, what are the things that we can, that'll step us towards making it easier?
Mm-hmm.
And what I really want to do, less talking and more people interacting, we'll see what we can accomplish in only 70 minutes.
Awesome.
The other thing I'm going to do is about facilitating mob programming.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a topic that comes up frequently. And I think that I was originally asked to do this. This is going to be a 3-hour, maybe, to two sessions, yeah. two 90-minute sessions.
Nice.
So we'll do a lot of workshop kind of stuff. But how do we maybe encourage mob programming when we're not a technical coach? We're just there as a maybe as an agile coach or something. So although my background is more on the technical side of things, I think that there's a lot of things we can explore. And I would say this more than anything, amongst your people, wherever you're working, there's a core of people who would love to be doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Let's find out who they are and make it easy for them to try the things that will lead them forward.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's great, and it'll be really exciting to be up there and talk and things along those lines. And I think that we're right around our time limit. So is there any last questions or anything else that we want to say before we sign off?
No, I'm good. I think
thank you for bringing me here. This was fantastic. I really enjoyed it.
We didn't cover every single topic that we had up there.
No, but that's
so we
can
maybe do some follow. Yeah,
time.
Something for next time. Exactly.
Yeah.
So thank you very much for watching Mob Mentality with us, and it's great to have Woody Zuhl here as a guest. And be sure to like and subscribe, as we're supposed to say at the end of every one of these videos.
Yes, which forces you to actually do it, right?
Yeah,
there's
exactly.
No way you can't do it.
And
now.
Then there's like a little notification bell that you can hit next to that. And I didn't know this is like subscribe and hit the notification bell, because that way you'll get an email whenever we post.
Oh,
every week.
So you will get notified.
That's right.
And then you can like subscribe on Twitter and then just obsess over the content, you know, for the rest of your life. So
perfect.
Thank you very much for signing on with us, and have a good day.
Have a good one.